Hi, and welcome along to Early Excellence's Head to Head podcast. It's great to have you here. I'm Sarah Carey, School Improvement Lead here at Early Excellence, and in these podcasts, I'll be connecting with real head teachers and school leaders. We'll be discussing hot topics in primary and early years education and sharing some real experiences. So keep listening to hear more about school inspections and impactful school improvement strategies. Hi there, it's time for another Head to Head podcast. I hope everybody is well and that the term is going positively so far. Today, I'm really delighted to be joined by Kate Davies and Becca Taylor from the Pines School, and we're going to be talking about all things Key Stage 1, which is going to be really exciting. So hello and welcome to you both. Good morning, good morning.
Good morning, hello.
Hello.
It's nice to see you both. Are you both okay?
Yeah, all good, thanks. Yeah, very good.
Good. Well, I'm delighted that we've reconnected. I know we kind of connected a good couple of years ago now, as is the way when schools are on development journeys. And Becca, I was delighted a couple of weeks ago when you reached out and said, can we update you about how our journey for continuous provision in Key Stage 1's going? And I said, absolutely. And then, of course, wheeled you into, let's have a podcast about it. So you came along very willingly, and I'm really pleased to kind of have you here today. So in terms of getting started, let's just hear a little bit about yourselves and your roles, if that's okay. Kate, it's probably best to start with you as the kind of the head of the school. So yeah, a little bit about you, if that's all right.
So my name's Kate Davies. I have been head teacher at the Pines School in Bracknell for 6 years. This is, coming up to the end of the sixth year. When I started in the school, we were requires improvement school, and we've been on quite a rapid journey of improvement in our school. And I've got a bit of a background working in special needs. Previously, I worked in lots of different areas, and also in my early part of my career, worked in America in kindergartens in America, which has also sort of helped with my shaping my values and the way I want to lead a school.
Okie doke, super, super. And Becca?
And I'm Becca Taylor. So I am the early years and Key Stage 1 lead at the school. I've been here for about 13 years, so seen quite a lot of changes through that time at the school. And most of my experience teaching, almost all, has been in Key Stage 1 and in early years as well. So I was Key Stage 1 lead for a long old while, and then a few years ago I moved to early years and had a stint in early years. Also became part of a team of sort of lead practitioners in the local authority, and then just last year moved back to year two and leading continuous provision in Key Stage 1.
Fantastic. And I would imagine, having been in early years for a couple of years, you call it the stint, actually that will have, I'm sure, kind of been quite insightful and informative, and maybe kind of helped to continue to shape your thinking around kind of learning through play and those sorts of things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And we'll dig into that shortly, I'm sure. So the Pines in Bracknell, as you say, we're in our RI school, obviously been on that development journey. A little bit more about the kind of the school context in terms of level of need, in terms of kind of deprivation, those sorts of things, just so our listeners can kind of get a picture of that.
So we've got 310 children on roll at the moment. We were a 2-4 entry school, and then we made a decision about 4 years ago to reduce to 1-4 entry school. That was for several reasons. One of the driving reasons was we had a significant deficit budget when I took over. Mm-hmm. And we needed to do something to stabilise the budget. And within Bracknell Forest at the time, there were lots of new schools being built, and that combined with birth rate meant that the numbers on roll were falling. So we needed to make a decision. We were also surrounded by quite a few other 2-form and 3-form schools. So we had to make that decision. And actually, it has helped to stabilise our budget, which was a big decision. We've got 30.3% SEND in our school. We've got 10.6% EHCPs. We also set up a specialist resource provision for children with ASD and communication needs. About 5 years ago, we set that up. So we do have quite a large level of need within our school. We are really proud of the fact that we're an inclusive school. We really enjoy working with all of our families, and we really are a community school. We're at the heart of our community. That was something I was really keen to do when I started. And I believe that that is what we have now become.
Fantastic, fantastic. I can see, it's a shame when we're doing recordings that people can't see your faces, because I can actually see the pride glowing out of
you. Yeah, absolutely.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. So in terms of, I was thinking back to when we first kind of connected together, and I think, Becca, it was when you were actually doing your stint in early years, and you accessed some online training, and we just kind of had a call with both of you afterwards, and you were kind of saying, actually, we're quite happy with what's happening in early years, and we're going to turn our eyes back to Key Stage One. I suppose, you knowing, Becca, that you were taking that step back into year one and year two. But if memory serves, you kind of explored a little bit around continuous provision in Key Stage One already, done a little bit of exploring, and then kind of halted that, and we're having a bit of a rethink or pulling things together. So I suppose, yeah, let's hear a little bit more about where the journey started, because it's a big step, isn't it, taking provision into Key Stage One, because it's for many schools, a shift in pedagogy away from that more traditional or formal approach, or that safety net approach of everybody is doing the same thing at the same time. So where did it start for you guys taking it into Key Stage One?
I think the first thing really was that we were looking at the learners in front of us and noticing that we had children really struggling with their transition from reception to year one or year one to year two. We also noticed that actually a lot of our learners were really passive learners. They weren't that engaged. They would sort of sit back. We'd noticed a little bit of sort of refusal or opting out of learning. And really, actually, when we looked at the children, it just wasn't quite right for them. And we'd looked at our curriculum. We'd felt like we'd designed a really engaging curriculum, but it just wasn't coming together.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was, and that was throughout the school. And the children had come back to school from COVID. There was a little bit of apathy in the community around education. Lots of children had been home, sort of, I say homeschooled, you know, put on a screen at home. And the children just weren't engaging. And we had done a lot of work on our curriculum, sort of getting ready for Ofsted, and we knew we had to do a lot of work for Ofsted when they were coming. And we had really worked hard on our curriculum. We'd identified what the needs were in our children. We'd worked together as a team, but something was still missing. And through Key Stage Two as well, the children were just quite passive and wanting to be spoon-fed. And Becca and I both really believed that this wasn't right, and there was something different that we could do for our children to make them more engaged. And what was really apparent was children in reception were so engaged in their learning, and we were sort of going into reception, the children were massively engaged, and then you go to the rest of the school and there was this sort of lack of engagement. And we just kept talking about it and then came up with we might need to do something different here.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, in early years, part of the statutory framework is those characteristics of effective learning. And that's actually what you're talking about, isn't it? It's those learning to learns and that intrinsic motivation and those learning behaviours. And of course, in early years, if you're running continuous provision, which is very common in lots of early year settings, the children are going to get lots of open-ended opportunities to learn. They can follow their own lines of inquiry, and they're having opportunities to not only learn through practical concrete experiences, but learn through play and in meaningful kind of context within that. And sometimes that often shifts. There's a transition to year one, and you know, if provision isn't there, or provision's perhaps there for a little bit of time, But actually, those things that we've set up in early years, there's lots of good practice on which we can kind of take the principles. And I think that's really important. It's about the principles of continuous provision. What continuous provision in Key Stage 1 isn't, is it's not a repeat of EYFS. Actually, in Key Stage 1, the principles are very similar, absolutely. But in terms of course, you're looking at a different curriculum, you're looking at slightly different organisations, those curriculum connections, but also those expectations need to be continually creeping and cranking up to keep things moving through, don't they? So, yeah. And I know, obviously, when we've been talking previously, you've got a really kind of strong belief and ethos around play and vision around play. And obviously, Kate, you said earlier about your experiences in kindergarten. So tell us a little bit about that in terms of your vision for play and where that sits with you.
I think that's grown over time, actually, of being a leader here. And Becca is so passionate about play, and seeing Becca in early years and really enhancing the opportunities for children, that really helped me believe that this was the right thing to do. We also had at the time a really good local authority advisor, Natasha Krellin, who was an early years leader as well. She came in, she was really passionate about continuous provision and the importance of play. So those that three-way professional dialogue really started us on that journey of going, oh, actually, we do think that is the right thing to do. Alongside the fact that we do have children with quite significant additional needs as well coming into the school. And it was something that was going to work for everybody. And we knew that that was going to provide opportunities and that equity for all of our children, not just some of our children. And that's really what started that journey for us. I also work with a leadership coach, and I was talking to him, and he really helped me form my vision as well, and suggested opportunities of other schools to go and visit. He obviously works with other leaders around the country, so I was able to go and visit other places, and that also helped in that development.
And I think in that, the time when I moved from year two to early years, and that was a really steep learning curve for me, going from, you know, quite formal year two teaching to reception. That was a lot of change. And so there was an awful lot of reading and a lot of early excellence podcasts and a lot of talking to colleagues and visiting other colleagues in the Bracknell Forest and a bit beyond as well, that sort of all came together to form this belief, which I think had always been there, that play is important and that children can be intrinsically motivated and that they are learners, whether we sit them at tables or not. You know, they are going to learn. And actually, it sparked a bit of a fire to protect play in the curriculum and to make their learning environment really engaging, and to give children that opportunity to learn in a way that excites them.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, now we know there was a paper released just a couple of weeks before the summer, wasn't there, around kind of the play agenda and the pushing play, not just in schools and the curriculum, but also out in the community, and lots of research around how far children kind of are allowed to go out and play now in society, and, you know, those fields that say no ball games. So there's a whole play agenda. But I think what's really interesting is, you're quite right, actually, children will learn. But it's about how best to present that learning to help the children learn most effectively and to be efficient in their learning, and almost to make it as easy as possible for them to learn, because there's lots of white noise out there. So if we can strip that back and actually help them to be efficient little learners and motivated learners, then I think that's really powerful. And whilst, Kate, earlier you kind of said, you know, we've done lots of work on the curriculum. You were in that position of being at the time an RI school. So whilst we don't do things for Ofsted, of course, that hangs over in terms of knowing to get things. But equally, placing children at the centre and taking that that step into a very different pedagogical approach is actually a very, very, very brave thing for school leaders to do, but particularly when you're in that circumstance of expecting an inspection and you know, it's not as easy necessarily to explain continuous provision or to take that step and have it embedded before inspectors arrive. And of course, we know, you know, things have changed, haven't they, with regards to inspection, but and there shouldn't be an opinion on the pedagogical approach. But of course, doing something different can be kind of quite nerve-wracking. That's an additional pressure, yet you still chose to take that step. So hats off in terms of leadership and those sorts of things. So it sounds like great to hear that actually you were accessing, you were having dialogues together, and I would imagine dialogues across your senior leadership team as well, exploring other schools and settings that are doing continuous provision. And that is something that we would absolutely recommend as well. We often get emails saying, can you recommend anywhere? Because reading about it and discussing it is one thing, but seeing it in action actually is really helpful, not to say, oh, we'll pick that up and do it in our school, but to then reflect on that would work, that wouldn't work, that wouldn't work for our context, this would work for our context, and helps to build that picture, doesn't it? So I think that's kind of really powerful. And of course, Nova, my colleague, came and had a day with you, really, I think, to... You were already quite, I remember saying that they know what they want. You were already kind of quite far along that thought process. But again, engaging with professionals to help crystallise that thinking and then actually say, right, what are the first steps and where are we going with those sorts of things? So I suppose on that note, it's better to move into kind of the strategic thinking and then the implementation. So were there any really big strategic decisions that you feel you kind of had to make, or things that staff were worried about that you had to kind of work through and remove barriers about? People can't see, but you're both nodding. And because of course, with any school development plan, actually, there's going to be bumps in the road, and it's about, you know, staff, it's about children, it's about parents and those sorts of things. So yeah, some any strategic things that listeners might kind of find useful to reflect on first.
I think I am, as a leader, and I've learned this over my leadership journey, I'm quite, if I believe in something and I'm really keen, I kind of go into it wholeheartedly. And I did that. And I think because I knew Becca and I knew it and we could see the vision, we sort of went, right, come on, let's do it. And I was so excited with it. In hindsight, or advice for other leaders, if they're that sort of level of enthusiasm, I would perhaps have put more of the scaffold in place for some of the other staff, because I think there were some people that really kind of we had to sort of bring them along on the journey. And I hadn't necessarily really thought about the impact that that would have on them initially. So I think there were a few things we did. We were really lucky. We applied for a grant from a local independent school or college, Wellington College, near us. They're really generous, and we got a quite a significant grant, which meant that we could buy a lot of resources. That's how we were able to have Nova coming in, and we were able to buy some really high quality early excellence resources, and that really helped with the implementation. But going back to sort of the strategy, I think I'm a doer. I like to get things done. I'm not particularly great at that sort of the planning stuff initially. And I think that's what I would do. If I did, would I do it again? I don't know. I don't think I would go back. I'd still probably do it exactly the same way. But I suppose the learning of it is that we have had bumps in the road.
And I think on reflection, so we knew that it was really important to get good buy-in. So we did do sort of some CPD. We did a lot of the foundation work as a team. We did a lot of the planning. Sort of the Key Stage 1 team did sit with our curriculum for a long time, and we did sit and look at what it might look like and what the classroom might look like and those sort of things. And we knew we needed buy-in, and we felt that we had buy-in, and we did have buy-in until it got tricky, or until the timetable didn't quite work for us, or until the pocket of boys weren't engaging in the way that we really wanted them to engage, or, you know, until whatever challenge we faced. And then that's when the buy-in sort of dwindles a bit. Mm-hmm. And that's where
you want to go back to your comfort zone. So people want to go back to what they know. And because continuous provision, unless you're an early years practitioner, continuous provision is so vastly different from the way you've gone through university and your ECT training. And it is different. And you want to go back into what feels comfortable. And so that was where the bumps arose.
And that's quite common, I would say, kind of for our listeners. You know, I think initially when people are starting, it often starts in the autumn term for year one. That's where people start to take that step, and that feels okay because the children are kind of moving through transition, so it feels familiar to the children and the staff. But it's as things start to, as I say, kind of crank up in terms of expectations, and as people start to feel the pressures of the curriculum and delivering that, actually that's where things can wobble, and it feels easier to, if you like, regain control and know every child is doing something. But you can then tick off coverage of that curriculum. But of course, coverage and teaching doesn't necessarily mean learning. And of course, what continuous provision brings in kind of bucketfuls is those opportunities for the children to practice and apply that newly acquired skill or new piece of knowledge from the curriculum in really meaningful context. So it's about seeing learning in a different way, isn't it? But humans are creatures of habit, so wanting to go back, and you're quite right, Kate, that safety net, go back to what I know. And because it's harder to push through, particularly when it's, being honest, it's happening in real time with children, and you want it to be working for them, and you want to kind of take that control. But pushing through, and I suppose having the conversations, the reflective conversations, and looking at what is working and what isn't working. And timetabling is, again, one of the big conversations that we have. You know, people kind of say, can you suggest a timetable? And we can give advice, but of course it's back to the school and the context, because there will be certain things you absolutely have to do. But keeping things kind of ends at starts and ends of sessions, giving that time in the middle. And I think the big thing is having those really high expectations of the children actually is so vitally important. There's a little anecdote that my colleague Nova always uses in training, and we always chuckle, and she talks about being presented with a tissue box and an egg box, and the child in year one says, I've made a crocodile, and Nova as the tea, she would say, well, actually you haven't, you've stuck an egg box on a tissue box. Let's look at how we can develop that, rather than accepting, well done. It's about raising those conversations and having those expectations and having those learning conversations with the children, for sure. So bumps in the road then around kind of timetabling, any kind of worries about the delivery of the curriculum, you know, seeing I'm not getting enough time to teach. Was there some concerns around that, maybe?
I think just going back to the timetabling, Becca will talk very competently about the sort of the curriculum coverage, but the timetabling has changed and grown over the last 3 years. So our current year three have been part of continuous provision. They've had the journey all the way through Key Stage Two. So for them, it has changed significantly. We started off with children having to do challenges, and that has changed now. And that was, I think, one of the big learning curves over the last 3 years was this timetabling. And by Becca and I going to visit other schools, we visited two other schools in completely different areas, and that has helped with that forming of what do we want to do at the Pines. But I think you can talk about coverage
and actually, still just on that point, I think actually one of the things our teachers really needed was more direction from us on things like the timetable and on like planning, what we wanted the planning to look like. And actually, because continuous provision was new, because we were trying different things, and because we were really aware that teachers use their planning documents differently in a way that is purposeful for them, we didn't want to be too directive. But that is something that I think we should have done differently, is we should have given more directive at the beginning, and then we could have scaled it back or changed it or negotiated it. That was something that I think we could have done differently and better.
And I think that's about that scaffolding again, isn't it? And but also being clear that this isn't how it's always going to be. These are the steps along the journey and the stepping stones. And as you say, for example, using challenges at the start of the journey to get to the end goal of not needing challenges, but having hugely motivated children that are following their own lines of inquiry, exploring their own projects, challenging themselves, applying what they've learned in lots of really interesting ways and showcasing what they know. That's the end goal, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's the stepping stones to get there. And of course, understandably, when we're introducing a very different pedagogical approach, it's saying to staff, these are the steps along the way, but it won't always be like this.
Yeah. And then in terms of our sort of curriculum as well, there were, in answer to your original question ages ago, there were concerns about fitting in the curriculum, lots of concerns about are we covering everything, are we going to have enough writing, are we going to have enough maths evidence, are we teaching reading in the right way, you know, all sorts of concerns about are we getting everything in, particularly for year two, particularly thinking about the end of year two sort of expectations, even though we know we're not sitting, you know, statutory assessments, still, I think that hangs over in people's minds. And actually, we had to go back to the national curriculum and just look at what's in there. And actually, it's not loads and loads. It's not loads and loads in the curriculum. And we got some real depth of learning by scaling back how much we did and looking at it in depth. And, you know, like a lovely year two example is the Great Fire of London. I think we did that just before Christmas. If you went and asked any member of year two, they could rabbit off lots and lots and lots of knowledge about the Great Fire of London, because we didn't do loads, but what we did was really meaningful and deep. And it meant that actually in their block play, in their outside area, in the art, in their junk modelling, it all became about the Great Fire of London, without a huge amount of direction from the teacher, actually, because the children loved it. And so they wrote their books and made Pudding Lane and did all sorts of things with perhaps just a very tiny one sentence suggestion that might be a good idea.
Yes, so, of course. And there's two things that kind of come from that. So it's about almost sharpening up to loosen up, and that sharpening up is having a real clarity in your curriculum aims, knowledge, skills, and actually attitudes and behaviours of children. But in terms of curriculum content, that key concepts, key knowledge, key skills, being really clear in what that is and delivering it, you know, really high quality teaching, but then enabling that connection to the provision. So actually continuous provision brings a lot of the national curriculum if it's well planned and if the right resources are there. But it's not about saying in every area you must go and do Fire of London, Great Fire of London. It's about the children taking what they know and being enthused and then going and showing you, this is what I know, this is what I've learned. And again, you touched on that makes it much more meaningful, and that makes my learning much more likely to stick. And then you can kind of build that progressive curriculum on. So I think that really recognising that connection between what's being taught and the kind of provision curriculum coming up. But it's not about, so everybody must do this like this. Actually, show us what you know is a really great phrase. You can choose to how you want to show me what you know about the Great Fire of London, for example, and kind of seeing what comes back. And when you get to that point, that almost releases the pressure, doesn't it? Because all the staff, all the team kind of get, oh, I get this now, look at that. And we would never have seen that if we'd have been writing about it in a book, if that makes sense. And potentially the children may not have been as enthused, potentially that knowledge may not have stuck as well as it has. So it's not an easy journey, you know, it doesn't just happen, but it sounds kind of really, really exciting. And I know when we were chatting just more widely, there were some real success stories for some individual children. Now, we're not allowed to name names, but it'd be really great if you could share just a couple of examples of specific children without naming names and those kind of real successes. I know you talked about a child who didn't want to write and then was just kind of, there was all sorts, wasn't there?
I think there's a lot of success actually. Our current year three, in their assessments that they do, they have made significant progress. And in compared to national, we do Pixel assessments and we compare to Pixel schools. And that year group have made really significant progress with their reading and their maths as well. So that's sort of a really, concrete evidence that it is working for those children. We don't do continuous provision in Key Stage 2, but what it means is that those children are therefore engaged and still have that intrinsic motivation to learn. They want to write, they want to do their learning. In year two, we do have some amazing successes. One that sticks out for me is a little boy who has a diagnosis of ADHD, finds it really difficult to sit. I can remember him in reception. He sort of was all over the place and really struggled. And then really early on in year two, they were doing about time, and he was able to show me what they were doing. They'd started off with seconds and minutes, going on to hours, and then his vocabulary, he was able to go on to decades, and was it millennium? And
he noticed that decades were missing in the sort of outward building up the amounts of time, and spoke about how much was a decade, how long was a decade.
And he was just really, it was able to showcase his knowledge, and he had such great knowledge around this. Whereas actually, if he'd been sat at a table doing the same exercise as everybody else, I'd never have got to see that in him.
And we were talking about a little girl actually who, when she came into reception, it was really clear that the family would need quite a lot of support. There were some sort of learning needs there, and they were quite anxious about school. The parents were quite anxious about how they would be able to support their child. And actually, she came in with really poor fine motor, really poor fine motor skills. And it was poor throughout reception, despite a lot of work on it. It was poor, her skills were poor throughout year one, despite a lot of opportunities. And then in year two, amazingly, from a lot of junk modelling. She loves junk modelling. So from the junk modelling and a lot of modelling with plasticine, and from also being our pencil sharpening person, and from, you know, those little things, from using her fingers, and from sort of chopping up fruit in our snack area, her handwriting is suddenly beautiful. And we do teach handwriting, but I think actually for her, it's been all of those many opportunities throughout the day to build her dexterity and the muscles in her hands that has meant that without sort of tears and without drama and without, you know, sort of that feeling like she's failing, without any of that, she's become a really strong handwriter. And and I love that.
That's the example of how it, because it's very holistic, isn't it? It's not that child, because there will have been handwriting being taught, of course, and there will have been kind of adults supporting that child and undertaking those things. But it's about that, those everyday opportunities to practice and apply. And it's not that, you know, that child's having to go off to do an intervention or to stop what they're doing and go and do something else. Actually, the things you're describing is all part of the provision, and also things that she's interested in, like junk modelling, for example, and creating. So that's, again, she's got her intrinsic motivations taking place there, but she's developing those skills that she needs, and it is kind of having impact for those children. And interesting that you've actually inadvertently talked about two children that have got need, and you talked at the start about the inclusivity, and we know that what works well for children with need can work well for children without need. So it's really kind of offering that inclusivity and equity, isn't it, as well, which is something that really drives you.
Yeah, no, we had a little boy, this was not that long ago, and he was outside. I was just walking past the outside, and he was building a structure with crates and planks of wood going across the two crates. And he was quite high up. And I was thinking, well, naturally, I could walk past and immediately tell him to get down because mm-hmm. it was a little bit risky. And I didn't. And the adults were not telling him to get down. And he was sort of stood at the top, but he was going, actually, I need to make this more sturdy. I need to be able to walk across this from one side to the other. But it's not working at the moment. So he sort of got down. He was able to do that mental risk assessment and work out what he needed to do to make it safer for him and his friends to walk across. But his vocabulary, his language was so rich in having that opportunity in that play. That means that he's engaged again.
Yeah. And I think, again, in those instances, it's about stretching the mind. That is problem solving. That is, he's got a clear intention in mind. He's making plans to achieve that. He's having to reflect, refine, work things through. And that's all those learning to learn. That's thinking, and thinking is learning. And you can't teach that. You have to facilitate that. And of course, continuous provision, again, will offer those opportunities for kind of thinking. And if the resources are open-ended, so two children can be using the same resource in different ways, again, if they're open-ended enough, then that will offer those opportunities for those children. And in terms of what you're talking about, in terms of risky play, again, is something that over time has perhaps been less seen in schools. And of course, we do still need to risk assess, but it's important for the staff team to know in that instance, actually, I'm sure your staff perhaps weren't saying to him, get down, but probably were, you know, keeping an eye to make sure that
high the crates are going to be stacked.
Absolutely. But it's again having that shared understanding, that shared ethos, that actually risky play is part of our vision for play. But it does sit within the realms of still keeping children very safe, but actually helping children to learn how to risk assess themselves and engage in that. Sounds wonderful. So, I mean, there's some very clear impact there for some specific children, but more widely, what about kind of more widely in terms of you talk? You've talked a little bit, Becca, about end of year two, and you know, I would imagine. I know your schools, you still moderate and those sorts of things. So how does that feel when you go and moderate with other settings who perhaps aren't doing continuous provision?
So do you know, actually, what has been really interesting is, yes, gathering with our year two colleagues, but the year one teacher has had some really, really interesting conversations with fellow year one teachers. And a lot of teachers that she has sort of moderated writing with from other schools have just been really jealous. She said they're really jealous that we work in this way. And also they have been blown away by the quantity and quality of the writing in the year one books. And it is similar in year two, but I think it's been really, the feedback from the year one teams has been really very, very interesting to hear, that actually other year one teachers who are using a more formal approach would love to do it and are really, really jealous.
But actually it's that, some teachers are nervous about the end result. You know, they sort of are nervous to take that leap and thinking, well, actually, if I'm not teaching five formal writing lessons a week, you know, are they going to get there? Are they going to get the results? And we have held our line, held our nerve with it, really. Mm-hmm. And actually, the writing is of equal quality, if not better, than other schools in our, we work in a little cluster with some other schools locally, very different demographics, but it's a really great little community of schools that we work together with. But yes, our writing, we don't teach it formally in the same way as other schools, but that has been noted that we are, that it is having, it's good quality, yeah, it's high quality.
Our data
is improving through Key Stage 1. Our end of Key Stage 2 results have not been as good as we would have hoped sort of throughout time. We know but we've always had to fill gaps from COVID, gaps from prior teaching. And this feels like we're playing the long game. This feels like we are not just getting children ready for SAT. That's not the ethos of our school, but it feels like because we're doing the right thing for children, we're giving them the right diet of education, the right opportunities, that is having an impact in data, that is having an impact that will carry them through the school. I'm really excited to see our current year threes when they get to year six, or our current year twos when they get to year six, because I genuinely believe we are doing the right thing for our children.
Absolutely. And I think as well, you know, but as the children leave Key Stage 1 into Key Stage 2, the brain is more ready to work in the abstract. And we work with some schools that do continuous provision to the end of year 2, and then actually it does become more formal, which is kind of similar to what you're doing. Equally, we work with some schools that are taking it through year on year because, you know, they feel that that's going to still work for their children in their context. But I think you're creating, through offering continuous provision, it's that whole child, isn't it? That picture of children having high levels of well-being, involvement, positive attitudes towards learning, towards school, and enthusiasm in terms of wanting to showcase what they know, a kind of in a really safe environment where they can flourish and kind of be experts and shine. And I think that's kind of really powerful. And I find it really interesting because we've talked about continuous provision. You are doing it in year one and year two. And again, sometimes we'll work with schools and say, well, just do it in year one till Christmas because some children need it. And the reality is child development and brain development tells us that the children are not ready to take things into the abstract until around the age of 7, which is well into year 2 for lots of children. Yeah. So this hot first term in the autumn term of year 1 is a good step, but it's not enough. And we've not kind of talked about just year 1 or actually you've done that whole picture and you can feel that it's really working. So if you staff then who've had bumps in the road, and when the team have had bumps in the road along the way, how are they feeling about it now they've kind of pushed through those real kind of pinch points, would they revert back? Can they see the impact? Are they enjoying it?
I think the interesting dynamic in our school is that we have had a lot of people on maternity leave, or a lot of people that there has been a staff turnover over the last 5 years. I think one of the reasons is people going off on maternity leave. So we've done a lot of training with our staff, and then we have to repeat it mm-hmm. because we've had mm-hmm. to have new staff in. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is people who have not wholeheartedly believed in it have left. And, you know, and I think I don't mind when people leave, if I'm honest, because actually they're leaving for the right reasons. It's actually, we've had those professional discussions of they don't necessarily share the same vision. And I'm a real believer that you've got to have your staff team sharing the vision, because if you're all pulling in different directions, that makes it incredibly hard. So this is actually the first year going that we have the same stable staff team in early years Key Stage 1, in fact the whole school. It's our first year we've got a stable team going forward. Nobody's going off to have a baby yet. Nobody's going, you know, we've actually got a team going forward. So our current year one teacher was new this year into continuous provision, and had come from higher up, or sort of Key Stage 2, from a different school, and has really embraced continuous provision. And it has been difficult because it's a new way of learning, but now she really embraces it, really enjoys it. Our early years team are really, you know, they're experienced early years teachers, and we've kept the same support staff team as well. So,
and I think as a team, we've now got a team who really do all buy into that value of play and that importance of play. I think every single one of us understand how important it is and understand that we want to protect play as well. It's, you know, we want to make sure that that is part of every child's everyday experience at school.
And I think in terms of, I'm going to kind of ask you for some top tips in a moment, but I think probably one of the things that's also helped along the journey is having two things, really, having had some experience of teaching in early years. I mean, we're strong believers in everybody should teach in early years at some point, because that helps to kind of see learning through play and kind of get to grips with it. But also having yourself, Becca, as the leader, but also within the phase, and you're in class, aren't you? So you are,
yes,
you know, walking the walk and talking the talk and facing the same barriers and feeling it and living it and breathing it with your team. And I think when you're doing a development journey, that's quite important to have somebody on the ground in it that is experiencing all of those things, but is also you're coming at it from a leadership point of view, as you know why you're doing what you're doing and kind of unpicking that. So I think that probably would have been really powerful as well. But from yourselves, kind of, I guess you talked a little bit about scaffolding and kind of those stepping stones. I'm saying about leadership and having somebody on the ground and being in it, having had some early years experience in looking that through. Any other top tips that you give to listeners, if you know, who are thinking about either taking continuous provision into Key Stage 1 or actually expanding it into Year 2, any top tips for them?
I think I was just sort of reflecting on something you said earlier about going into Key Stage 2 with continuous provision, and that at the start of the journey was something I wanted to do. It was like, right, we're going to roll it out into Year 2, then we're going to roll it out to Year 3, and then we're going to roll it out to Year 4, and that's what we're going to do, and it's going to be all the way up through the school. And actually I've sort of taken a step back and said, no, we're going to get it right in Key Stage 2 first. We're going to embed it in Key Stage 2. There might be a future for it in Key Stage 2, but we're not there yet. We need to just get it right first.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the learning curves, is actually making sure we are now really getting it right, and we feel we're at a place now that we are doing that. And I think as well what you said about some schools want to do it for the autumn term to ease that transition, I don't really believe in that. I don't believe that that's continuous provision. I think that's, you're just trying to stick a plaster over making trying to fit two things that don't really fit together. And I don't really think that's right, because it takes such a lot of work and effort from the teachers, that if you're going to put all that effort in, you don't then want to get rid of it at Christmas. That's
all you're doing is it's kind of moving the cliff face that the children fall off between reception and Year 1. You're kind of just moving that cliff face to the start of the spring term, because actually, as I said, children developmentally are still not ready to learn in an abstract way. So I mean, we talk all the time to schools that it's not just until Christmas.
It's continuous provision,
not just for Christmas. Yeah, I think we did a blog about that last year. I think it was titled almost like that, because again, and it comes from a good place, it's that depth of actually why that pedagogical approach is in place, why it's effective, why it helps children to learn in a really positive way and helps them to make those connections, because that's helping neurological pathways in the mind, isn't it? And we absolutely talk about, if you're doing continuous provision as a pedagogical approach, then actually it's about working it through the year groups, not just partway through. As you say, it's not the best practice to be doing it in that way, really, for the children. So any other top tips from you, Becca?
Well, I think the thing that Kate and I have kind of said again and again is about holding our line, and actually it's been really important that both of us have been bought into the vision, because there have been times where, you know, maybe we've looked at something and thought, oh, is this really working? You know, maybe Kate has said, oh, is this really working? I don't think we're quite getting this bit right, and we need to look at it. Do we just need to go back to what we know? Or there have been times where I've said, oh, we're not quite getting enough of the writing in their book, so I feel like I'm not quite there with it. What should we do? And actually between us, we've been able to say, no, we're going to hold our line. We know that we're doing continuous provision because we believe it's the right thing for our children. And if we believe it's the right thing for our children, and we've done our research and we've, you know, we've got our vision, then we're going to hold the line, hold the line. And this year really has been quite a year of sort of saying, right, let's hold our line. Yes, we do need to make a change here, or yes, this bit's not quite right, so we just need to have a tweak, but we do believe in continuous provision, so we're going to hold our line. Mm-hmm. And I think it's about doing, we've looked at the why we're doing it, we've done the research, we did the work with Early Excellence, and I think having Nova here at the start was really valuable. That really helped us to, in those early stages. I think it would be the consider your staffing, consider who you're going to put in year one and year two. Mm-hmm. Make sure that they are bought in, but also be prepared for those bumps in the road along the way. Yeah. But also think about what training you are going to put in as leaders to make sure they feel equipped to do their job properly. I mean, that's sort of a top tip anyway, but that's something that is important around continuous provision. And I think it's from a leadership point of view, it is about being brave. We started this approach before we had a visit from Ofsted, and I could very well have said, no, I'm not going to do anything like that, because we've got to do the sort of normal usual thing. And actually I just went, no, I'm not, it's not about waiting for somebody to come and do that. We've got to do what's right for our children. And I think it is about being brave, and you've sort of got to trust your inner instinct, yeah, really, as leaders. Yeah. And just every once in a while, stepping back and just observing the joyfulness of it.
Yeah.
We've both said it's so joyful. There was a moment a few weeks ago where I just sort of looked up and there was like a child sewing, a child like curled up in an armchair reading. There were about so many of them in the jump modeling area making something massive. They were making these massive robots that were human sized robots. And then like you look outside and they're in the sand pit, and it was a moment where I looked up and everybody was engaged in something really purposeful. And I could literally pick out every single child and say, this is just one thing of many that they are learning in this moment. And it that was a real like moment of joyfulness. And there are lots of bumps and ups and downs. You've got to step back and look at the joy for a bit as well.
Yeah. And I think, you know, teaching is a hard profession. Those bumps are in the road, you know, really, regardless of the pedagogical approach you're taking, those bumps will be there. And I think you're right, stand back and see those things and actually celebrate, because sometimes we don't stand back and celebrate how far we've come. And I think the two things I would add to that is it's time. It takes time, particularly in this instance, when you're talking about a shift in pedagogical approach, it takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. And it is about holding the line and pushing through that feeling of, oh, let's go back to what we were doing before. It's about pushing through that and being resilient, but also those reflections and, you know, effective practitioners, effective teachers, effective leaders stand back and reflect and kind of recognize, okay, these things are going really well, that might need fine tuning, because of course things are on a continual journey of development, aren't they? And it's never really get to the point of done it. You do the big work and then it's continual development, isn't it? And that continued striving. But I think that standing back and reflecting is also really important. Oh, I can tell you're so passionate about what you're doing. I thought you were almost going to shed a tear there, Becca, when you were thinking about your class as you looked up. Yeah, and you must be so proud of that, because actually all of the hard work is helping you to deliver on the vision and values for the school, and actually is making a real difference for your children and the quality of education that they're getting. So it must feel great to kind of be in that place. And like you say, it's not all finished, but it must feel great to be in that place. So and that's why actually you wanted to get in touch and kind of say, this is where we are, let's talk about the journey. And I know, you know, as part of your work, you visited other schools. Do you have people come and visit you now now, or would you be happy for people to come and visit you?
We have sort of informally hosted quite a lot of people through this year, just sort of friends of friends or someone I spotted on this place or that place, people have come and visited. And actually next year we would like to sort of formalize that a little bit more and maybe offer out days where people can come and visit. Yeah. That's not quite all in place yet, but I think we're happy for people to look on our website, but also to get in touch.
Email into our, we've got an email address, the office, it's admin@thepinesschool.org.uk. Happy for people to email into there, and we will start to arrange visits, and then we might do, we're going to plan out some days across the academic year where we can open up the school to people.
Yeah. And it's about showcasing, isn't it? And, you know, we're not saying it's perfect. And obviously, as we said at the very start, your context will be different to other contexts, but it is about sharing practice and inspiring others and kind of sharing practice, sharing the journey and seeing those sorts of things happening. And I know from our point of view, we're looking at doing a Key Stage 1 event in the spring term. So I feel like we may well be in touch with you if you'd like to kind of participate in that. But there is definitely kind of appetite and interest and genuine people want to take that step and get it right. So, yeah, no, that's wonderful. It's great that you're happy for people to get in touch. So thank you very much. So I'm going to say to you, Kate, just to kind of finish, as the head of the school, come on, give us a kind of summary almost why you'd never go back, why you'd do it.
Oh, I'm quite emotional about it, actually, because I think I'm so proud of, I'm so proud of the school that we've created. And I say we, because it is a huge team effort. I'm so proud of it, but I'm so proud to just watch our children. It's seeing children be children, and they are just so happy. We've got happy learners in our school. And it's not about fun. It's about purposeful learning, purposeful play. And it's something that I think I believed in a dream far away. I believed that this school could be possible. And I feel that we've got there now. So I think continuous provision, working with Becca and other staff that are passionate about change, passionate about doing the right thing for children, has created a school that I'm genuinely really proud to be the leader of.
Oh, that's wonderful. And it does. I mean, it sounds like it's been a really tough journey, long journey, lots of discussions, lots of CPD, lots of refining, but so many positives for your children, for your families and for your staff and actually for your school going forward. I think, you know, it's really powerful. So thank you so much for sharing your journey. It's been a real pleasure to hear it and kind of see your smiles and feel your passion, but also feel your emotions. I can see that you are bursting with pride, literally. Yep. And that's wonderful. So good luck with the kind of the onward journey. And stay in touch with, let me know how those year threes move through, you know, even if you're doing a more formal approach in Key Stage 2, but actually it's about that big picture in terms of how it's worked for them. I look forward to hearing all about it, and I'm sure we will be in touch ahead of the spring term.
Thank you so much.
Take care, both.
Well, thanks for joining us today. I hope you found it a valuable listen and that you've taken some things away to reflect on, or maybe things that you want to discuss with your colleagues. Of course, remember, if you want to talk about any of the issues that we've explored today, or you need support with other matters in your school, then do feel free to drop me an email, sarah@earlyexcellence.com, or why not get connected with me on LinkedIn or Twitter. Anyway, take care and join me next time for some more genuine head-to-head conversation.